You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're visiting with Dr. Stephen Blank, one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving Russia, and before that, the Soviet Union. He is these days a senior fellow for Russia at the American Foreign Policy Council. He has great credentials as a teacher in these subject matters, specifically of national security studies at such professional institutions of the U.S. military as the U.S. Army War College and the U.S. Air War College. He has also written extensively on these subjects, and you can find his monographs and scholarly articles and books at Amazon and elsewhere. And Dr. Blank, we were talking about what Putin is up to. I wondered if I might ask you to talk a little bit about the thesis of one of the other contributors to our new book, Putin's Reset, The Bear is Back and How America Must Respond, which will be available for free, by the way, folks, as a PDF at our site, securefreedom.org. Namely, that of David Satter, also a colleague of yours, who has expressed very serious concerns about how Putin came to power in the first instance. Would you talk a little bit about your take on that and David's thesis that terrorism was involved?
Yes. I mean, I've talked to David about this over the years, and I've read his books. And there are other people besides John Dunlop, for example, who's written on this. If you go back to 1999, the Yeltsin government was in serious danger, not only of losing the presidential and parliamentary elections, but of having leading people like Yeltsin and his family being arrested. Yeltsin made it clearly could not go on as president because his health had just been shot. And also, Yeltsin was not the kind of man who wanted to be the lifetime czar, although he certainly had a craving for power. But he was determined to secure his legacy and protect himself and his family. And they decided to appoint Putin as the successor. Now, at the same time, in Chechnya, which is in the North Caucasus, several hundred miles south of Moscow, you had an insurgency beginning that was composed of nationalist and of jihadist elements at the time. Suddenly, in the late summer and early fall of 1999, you have a series of apartment bombings in Moscow, which are quite terrifying. Several people are killed. And this was widely attributed to the Chechens until they found a drill going on or a rehearsal for another bombing in another city, like I think it was Ryazan, where they clearly it was being run by the FSB, the secret police. And the evidence that has come out ever since 1999, according to Dunlop and to David Satter, is that the Russian government under Yeltsin and Putin orchestrated these terror bombings to blame the Chechens, to get a free hand to strike at them in the North Caucasus, and to ensure that Putin would be elected by terrifying the country. So essentially, as David says in his new book, if you want to understand Russia, you have to believe the unbelievable, namely that a government would wage war of terror on its own people.
Let me turn to something that you started pointing out in the previous segment, and that is the other techniques by which the general objectives of the Russian government under Vladimir Putin can be advanced. One of them you mentioned is economic warfare. Do you see signs of economic warfare being waged against us? It's certainly been the case that subsequent to Putin's intervention in Ukraine, and to some extent, I guess, some of his behavior in Syria as well, there have been some pretty devastating sanctions vis-a-vis the Russian economy, economic warfare, I guess one might say, against Russia. But is it practicing it against us as well?
Well, actually, we're practicing it against Russia in return for the invasion of Ukraine. Sanctions are a classic form of economic warfare, and Russia has no monopoly on this. We have been waging economic war against terrorists and their supporters for years, and against North Korea for years. So there's no Russian monopoly on this. But one of the key tactics that Russia has used is the use of energy or access to trade and investment opportunities in order to gain leverage on economic and political elites and institutions, mainly in Europe. They're trying to do this now with Japan. They're trying to get Japan to sign a peace treaty with Russia that would end the formal formally end the state of war, although there's no war between Russia and Japan going back to 1945. And what they are trying to say to Japan is that if you know you'll have opportunities to invest and so forth. Now, once those opportunities are taken, then the Russians will be able to try to gain some leverage on Japanese business. Similarly, in Europe, where they have major energy export connections, they try to use the export connections or the possibility of new exports to Europe and trade and revenues and investment as a form of seeking influence on European economic and political elites and institutions.
To put a fine point on this, when the Russians use these sorts of techniques to subvert or co-opt or otherwise influence European nations, certainly their companies and presumably thereby their governments, is this form of economic warfare, as you see it, understood as such? Our colleague Roger Robinson, I think you know Steve Blank, has pointed out that if economic warfare is dressed up as commercial transactions, many governments in the West, including our own, tend to give it a pass. Is that a fair criticism, do you think?
Well, if it takes place formally as commercial interaction, it's very difficult to attack it as a form of economic warfare. But I think it's pretty well known what they have been trying to do in Europe. I mean, what they are trying to do now, for example, is to isolate Ukraine from Europe in terms of energy and deprive Ukraine of billions of dollars of tariffs for energy that now goes through Ukraine to Eastern Europe through pipelines that were built during the Soviet period. And the pipelines in Eastern Europe then go on into Germany and Italy and Austria and potentially beyond. So, yes, this is dressed up as business. And the Russians always claim, well, we're just doing business and you're trying to, you know, punish us. But the fact is that the Russians have used the energy card, that's the primary one, numerous times, either to reward or punish governments or the factions in particularly in Eastern Europe, and through the revenues they get through energy, also try to buy into media and other strategic sectors in these economies so that they can have a permanent influence.
And pipelines, of course, are a big feature of this kind of energy / economic warfare. Now, I guess a building through Turkey and through the Baltic Sea into Germany. Is that right? Ways to circumvent Ukraine, as you say.
There are two plans. The Turkish one is called Turk Stream. It is supposed to go from Russia to Turkey through the Black Sea and perhaps might even go through Crimea, which is on the Black Sea, which was, of course, conquered Russia, territory from Ukraine. And it would send to Turkey about the same amount of gas that Russia now pipes through Ukraine. The idea here is that, one, they would satisfy the Turkish domestic market, which is quite large. But beyond that, once the gas gets to Turkey, it would then go to the Greek-Turkish border, and at which point it could go into Europe. Because since the European Union has no jurisdiction over Turkey, they can't prevent it. I don't think this is going to work, and it's certainly not economically feasible by any rational assessment. But the point of all these plans is that they're political. The same is true about the second pipeline they're now trying to build through the Baltic Sea to bypass all the littoral states of the Baltic Sea, the three Baltic states and Poland. It would go directly to Germany, and then supposedly would go from Germany back east.
Steve Blank, hold the thought. We've got to pause for just a moment. When we come back, I want to sort of pull the string a little further on how this is going to translate into additional dependency in Europe upon these gas supplies from Russia. That and more with Steve Blank right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.